Hawk fans, and welcome to a special edition of Tales from 54th and City. My name is Joe Greenwich, and I will be joined today by a pair of soon-to-be Hall of Famers as we highlight the eight outstanding women that will be inducted into the St. Joseph's Athletic Hall of Fame on October 15th. A little later, we'll be joined by 2002 graduate Teresa Andriani, a former Atlantic 10 Student Athlete of the Year during her time on the Hawks softball team. She also graduated among the all-time leaders in program history in a number of categories and earned three All-A-10 honors during her time on Hawk Hill. But our first guest today had an outstanding career on the water and in the classroom as one of the most decorated rowers in the history of the women's rowing program. She was a two-time Atlantic 10 Student Athlete of the Year and helped lead her boat to wins at the 2006 Dadville Regatta and the 2009 Atlantic 10 Championship. From the class of 2009, we welcome Debbie Bateman. Debbie, thanks for joining us.
My pleasure.
First of all, congratulations on your honor of being inducted into St. Joseph's Athletics Hall of Fame. How exciting was it to hear about that?
It was really exciting, really unexpected, and as you said, definitely a serious, meaningful honor.
How did you find out? Did you get a phone call? Was it your former coach, Gary? Was it an email? How did you find out about the Hall of Fame?
Yeah, so I got a text from my former coach, Gary, asking to speak with me. I hadn't rowed in a long time, so I knew it wasn't him yelling at me for my technique. So I called him back and he delivered the news.
I've talked to a couple of the other honorees, and it seems like you might be the first one that actually kind of got the message right away. There's a lot of missed calls. There's some, hey, can you call me? But it's always the same, like, I wonder what this is about. And no one ever really expects it. And I guess it's not the kind of thing you really do expect, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's the first time the possibility ever even entered my mind is I'm pretty good friends with Pat Kalathis, who was a basketball player who was inducted. And when he was inducted, I remember thinking, man, that would be so cool. But I didn't actually think it would happen to me. I just remember thinking that would be so cool. So getting the call, I was happy to, first of all, be able to tell him, hey, I'm on your level now.
Well, this year is also a celebration of the 50th anniversary of Title IX, and this class being part of that celebration. What does it mean to you to be a part of that group of eight outstanding women that are getting inducted into the St. Joseph's Athletic Hall of Fame?
It's pretty flattering and just amazing when you think about in a relatively short time span how far along women's sports have come. And rowing especially has been affected by Title IX because I think at a lot of schools, it's a sport that offsets some of the male sports. So I'm certainly grateful for that because I wouldn't be here were it not for that. But I feel like it's a privilege and an honor to be inducted with all these other women and just to have that really represent, women's sports and just, like I said, how far we've come and hopefully we'll continue to progress.
Is that something you were cognizant of while you were rowing that this opportunity was something that many in the past hadn't had?
Yeah, I mean, I admittedly, it's not something I thought about on a regular basis, but I certainly thought about it when I was being recruited, you know, when you're considering financially if you can afford to go to certain schools. Like, I was actually also recruited for swimming, and there was just a lot more funds in rowing because of Title IX and because, you know, they're at most schools, there's not a male crew team. It's usually a club team.
When you mentioned being recruited, how long had you been rowing before you came to college? Like, was that a sport that you picked up young? I know it's probably the one that if anybody comes to a sport later on, it's one of the more common ones where you see that.
Yeah, you know what? I dabbled in it a little bit when I was growing up. Kind of everybody in South Jersey did. And then I only actually rowed for 2 years in high school because of some injuries. And I was just really fortunate that certain coaches still had enough faith in me that they took a chance on me despite only having 2 years of experience, and Gary obviously being one of them.
So what was it that ultimately brought you to St. Joe's that made you choose Hawk Hill over any other offers that made you choose rowing over swimming? Was it strictly that scholarship decision, or was there something about the sport that really got your competitive juices flowing maybe more than a swimming race did?
Right. So definitely in part, it was the financial aspect, but also the truth is my sister was always just a hair better than me at just about every sport. And rowing was the first sport where I was able to beat her. And it was like, finally, you know, after 18 years, I found my sport and I can beat her. And what ultimately brought me to St. Joe's was truly just my visit. It felt like home. I had an awesome friend who was already on the team, Amanda Holland, who was kind of my host, who took me around, and it just felt right. Like everything just felt like I was supposed to be there.
See, now the problem is you've admitted that it was your sister that kind of drove you into it. And so now she can take some credit for you getting into the Hall of Fame.
Yeah. I guess I'll let her take a little bit of that credit. I certainly took a lot of her credit over the years.
Obviously, you had a strong career on the water, great academic credentials during your time at St. Joe's. Surely you have a lot of great memories and stories from your time on Hawk Hill. Is there anything that comes to mind that you maybe wanted to share, like your favorite moment or story of something that happened, you know, maybe with your team or just something that sticks out to you when you think back on your career?
Sure, I would be happy to. And one comes to mind right away. We were in San Diego. There was the San Diego Crew Classic on the West Coast. And just merely being able to go to San Diego once a year was a treat, especially in March when you're ready for warm weather. But this was my senior year. It was kind of the last hurrah. And we had Gary as well as another coach, Jen Goldsack, who had actually competed in the Olympics, who were really guiding us every day while we were out there. And Gary always just had such a cool approach to any of these rowing trips where he wanted us to experience the trip and not simply be there as robots there to row. So, you know, he was okay with us going into Old Town in the evenings or Ocean Drive. And I think it was called Ocean Drive, it might have been Ocean Beach. And just kind of like enjoying ourselves and enjoying each other and the team. And then when it was time to work, he expected us to work. And that's kind of how the whole trip went, especially that year where there were, you know, a couple seniors in the boat, and he just had this kind of cool laid back approach until it was time to work. And we knew that about him at that point. And Jen was really awesome because she just had so much knowledge about rowing that she kind of guided us in terms of, you know, what to do before and after the race, how much sleep to get, just like every little small intricacy to maximize our performance. And also kind of knew what to talk to us about in terms of the course and when to expect the wind to hit and what to do about it. So everything just kind of fell into line perfectly where we weren't stressed out. We were in a good mindset. We were happy. We were getting along well as a team. But when it came time to get to that race and to perform, we were able to perform and we ended up winning the race, which was awesome. And just, it was just so special and so different from any other race that, I don't know, it always just has stood out where it really just felt like a team effort and like a team bonding experience.
When you talk about your team, obviously the rowing team is a team of a certain size. Do you find that when you're on a certain boat, that those are the people that you always gravitated towards, like you considered that your group and like that was the group that you spent the most time with? Or do you think that the team just kind of everybody sort of integrated with one another really well?
There's definitely a tendency to gravitate towards your boat a little bit, especially when you're talking about practices and races and stuff like that. But I personally always felt like the team as a whole got along really well. I considered like everyone a friend. And the other thing that was kind of cool is that they would always mix it up. You never had a set boat because the coaches never wanted anyone to be complacent. They were always trying different combinations. And there were even different parts of the season where there'd be like team activities like Guts Week or like spring training where they'd mix up the teams completely. And you could be on a team with someone that you never rode a stroke with in your life. And you had to come together and figure it out and try to win.
Now, a lot of people would say simply getting into a boat this early in the morning and competing is a challenge, but we've been talking to some of the other inductees about, obviously about some of their memories, but also maybe a challenge or something that you had to overcome. Maybe it was academically, maybe it was on the water, maybe it was another specific race. Is there something that comes to mind that you know that when you came out of it on the other side, that you were better for the experience?
Yeah. So my junior year, I actually studied abroad in Australia. And everybody always thinks like, oh, that must have been so fun. That must have been so great. But in my reality, it was very different going from being on a team at St. Joe's, kind of being a top dog on that team and at St. Joe's, and then going to another country, having no team and being a nobody and being in a 14-hour time difference. So I actually ended up getting pretty depressed and feeling pretty isolated while I was out there, lost a ton of weight, didn't work out enough, got back to St. Joe's and was just kind of a different person. And I credit the team for helping me get out of that and, you know, having that structure again, having that camaraderie again, and, you know, just kind of lifting me up every single day and being able to count on that to kind of get through that depression that could have otherwise made my college career, you know, a lot tougher. And I would have had to struggle through those last couple of years, but if it weren't for the team, I don't know that I would have been able to reestablish that sense of significance and get that joy back, that the joy that came from being on the crew team with, you know, those other girls.
Do you think that was maybe, I want to say a turning point, do you think, but obviously it's something that sticks with you. Do you think it was a big marker in your career? Like things maybe went to another level after that because, you know, like you said, the support of your team and really refining that joy?
Yeah, I definitely do think so. I do remember that being a turning point, and even one particular day thinking like, it is time for me to turn this around, and having my team in mind when I made that decision.
The last thing that I've been asking everybody, big picture, obviously a lot of experiences in your time on Hawk Hill, some good, some not as good. What do you think is the biggest lesson that you took from your athletic career? Or maybe it was something, again, maybe something else off the water that you took into your postgraduate life that you look back and you say that, you know, if someone had to say, what's the I guess I am doing that right now. If someone was saying, what's the biggest lesson you learned? What do you think that is?
Right. So that's a pretty easy one. It's one word, credit to my coach, Gary Quinlan, and it's harder. And that was Gary's favorite word when we were at practice. It was a lot of times all he would say, you'd be in the middle of a piece and he'd just say, harder, harder. And what I figured out then and what I've carried through onto my life is that sometimes you might be thinking you're doing enough, but you have to figure out a way to go harder. Even when it feels impossible, you have to figure out another way, because that's the only way you're going to get to where you need to go. And yeah, it has definitely been a ongoing reminder of just how to approach all different things in life, whether you're dealing with depression, whether you're dealing with adversity at work, or whether you're just doing a 5K, figure out how to go harder, figure out a different way.
And I think a lot of that coming, like we said earlier, at 6:30 in the morning makes it all the harder than it can be, right?
Right.
Well, Debbie, thank you for joining us. Again, congratulations on your induction into the Athletics Hall of Fame, and we'll see you next month.
All right. Sounds great. Thank you.
That was Debbie Bateman, class of 2009 from women's rowing. We'll be back with another inductee into the St. Joseph's Athletic Hall of Fame after this. Today's show is brought to you by Mainline Health. 4 suburban hospitals, 4 top regional rankings, and a proud sponsor of the St. Joseph's Hawks. For award-winning human care, visit mainlinehealth.org. The Kettle Club Podcast Network is brought to you by Rothman Orthopedics. Rothman Orthopedics, the official team physicians of your St. Joseph's Hawks, provides the region with unmatched orthopedic care. For more information or to schedule an appointment, visit www.rothmanortho.com. For orthopedic excellence, think Rothman first. And also by Univest. Handle all your banking remotely with the Univest mobile platform. Easy, convenient, and secure, because life needs a little more wow. Live life, stay connected with Univest. Univest Bank and Trust Company, member FDIC. We're back, and our next guest, as I mentioned earlier, a three-time Atlantic 10 all-conference selection during her time on the Hawks softball team, a former A-10 Student Athlete of the Year. We're happy to have with us Teresa Andriani from Hawks softball. Teresa, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
First of all, congratulations on your induction, your pending induction, rather, to the St. Joseph's Athletics Hall of Fame. How exciting was it for you to find out that you were going to be one of those eight inductees?
It was surreal. Like, I had no idea what was going on. I got a text message from Don DeJulia, who is my AD when I was at St. Joe's. And he's like, I got something to talk to you about. Can I give you a call? And I was like, yeah, okay. So of course I text my teammates who I'm still very close with. We have a group chat going, and I'm like, guys, did Mr. D, because we called him Mr. D. I'm like, did Mr. D text you guys? Like, do you know what's going on? And they're like, no. So I'm like, okay. So I called back, and to hear it from him was really, like, that was the icing on the cake. So I was super excited, and I'm still super excited.
I've talked to a couple other inductees, and nobody got the call first or saw the message until after the fact. Nobody just picked up the phone and answered it. It's kind of funny. Everyone's like, well, I wonder what this is about. Why is she reaching out to me? I haven't spoken to her in a while. I wonder what's up. And yeah. It's the same kind of thing with you.
Yeah, it was awesome. Yep.
So this year's induction is part of the Hawks' celebration of the 50th anniversary of Title IX. Mm-hmm. So what did it mean to you to be part of this group that is being honored in conjunction with that celebration?
Two thoughts initially. So, like, I'll go with the Title IX aspect first. So, like, I immediately thought, you know, my teammates and I were fortunate because we went to college at a time where, like, all of the heavy lifting had been done before us, right? Men and women that kind of put the passion behind their beliefs and got Title IX kind of incorporated into college athletics. And so without that, you know, my teammates, myself, we would have never had the opportunity to play competitive softball that we loved at a collegiate level for a school like St. Joe's. You know, we would have never had that student athlete experience that was incredible at St. Joe's, you know, and I wouldn't have been equipped with so many life skills that playing a team sport at a collegiate level, Division I, gives you and imparts on you, and kind of equips you for the rest of your life. So, like, in that regards, Title IX is super important, as is the work that men and women did before us to really make it come to fruition for us and for the people down the road. And then the other part of it was like, well, you know, I would hope that being inducted into the Hall of Fame, like being chosen to be inducted, which is a huge honor. I'm thinking to myself, I hope that it's based on my quality of play on the field and the impact that I had on the success of my team and on the success of my teammates around me, and not because I was a woman or not because of some other reason, right? So you always want to feel like you've made an impact because of who you are, not whatever box you fall into. So, like, I had, like, a bunch of different feelings about the whole thing, but, like, I am very much aware that I am super fortunate to have played competitive ball at a time when it was cool. Like, when, you know, we had the opportunity and we made the most of it.
Now, you do have a bunch of accolades to your record, a bunch of all conference and some academic honors as well. So before you were able to do that, though, you had to get your start. So what was it that drew you to softball and made you think that it was something that you wanted to do in college?
So it's funny. I actually started as a dancer when I was younger. I danced for like 10 years. But, you know, on my street growing up, I used to hang out with all the boys. We used to play all sports all the time. And then my brother, who's 3 years younger than me, started like t-ball, right? Started playing baseball at a very young age. And so I started throwing the ball around with him. I throw the ball around with my dad. And honestly, we're a very big Yankee household here.
Uh-oh.
And so, you know, my mom always jokes, and she's dead serious in that, you know, she gave birth to me, and in the hospital room, the first thing that went on the TV was the Yankee game. So that was the first thing that I watched on TV was baseball. So she's like, we got it, you know, ingrained into you very early that baseball was like king in the household. So I just started playing with my brother and my dad. And then my mom's like, hey, you want to try softball? You like baseball? We could put you, you know, in a softball program. I said, okay. So I started playing. I grew up in Toms River, New Jersey. You know, it's a pretty big baseball town. So I played for the Toms River Girls Softball League. I was a Cub, like maybe fifth or sixth grade.
Right.
And it was just, I loved it. You know, I went in thinking I was a third baseman. I was an infielder. This is great. And then my coach was like, do you think maybe you'd be interested in catching? Because you seem to be the only person that could reach second, like on a fly. And I was like, okay, you know, it's cool gear. I'll give it a shot. And then it kind of like, it took off from there. And, you know, I played in middle school, and I started getting asked by the pitchers in the area. You know, we had Toms River is a big, big area. We have three high schools, three middle schools. And I used to have kind of friends kind of all over through the softball league. And they needed a catcher to go to a clinic so they could learn how to pitch. And right. I don't know if you've ever seen softball players learn how to pitch, like before they can actually pitch. It's the most destructive thing you could ever witness, right? And so here
that's
I am.
That's why you have the gear.
Correct, right? But this is clinic, so I didn't have gear at the time. So I learned very quickly that if I didn't catch the ball, I would have trouble walking, you know, for the next couple of days. So I just learned how to catching all of these pitchers that were learning how to pitch. We kind of grew up together, and I really just found a love for catching. Because it's the hardest, in my opinion, the hardest, you know, position on the field. And I like that challenge. And I like the team aspect. And I was like, this is great. This is what I want to do. And it just kind of took off from there.
It's funny how it works out that, you know, simply because you're the one willing to do it, or you're the one who's able to do it, we find ourselves kind of guided to the things we end up holding on to, right?
Yeah, for sure.
So when you were looking at playing in college, what was it that made St. Joseph stand out to you that made you think, I want to be a Hawk. That's where I want to be.
So I remember this was like 25 years ago now. so I remember looking at a couple of D3 schools in Jersey. I'm Jersey based, and you know, never always kind of wondering, I mean, I was a good player in high school. My pitcher and I were, you know, were really good combo, and our team was decent. But like, you always question, like, am I good enough to play Division I? Like, am I good enough? I don't know, right? So I looked at some D3 schools. And then the coaches at the time at St. Joe's, Charlie Wiener and his coaching staff, came to a tournament that I was playing in to watch me play. And I got some interest from that school in having me come to play there. So I went to visit. And it wasn't like an overnight visit like you have with some, you know, some recruits. Now, I'm not sure how they do recruiting now, but I mean, back when I was in college, I remember hosting a few recruits in the dorm room and just kind of giving them the rundown of what it's like to be a softball player at St. Joe's. But I just went for the day to visit. I met a couple of players on the team, Christina Kowalski, who's in the Hall of Fame, who's the best player I think I've ever played with. And then met the coaches, and then kind of also took a tour of the campus and was like, this place is really beautiful. Like, this is great. And I remember talking to my parents on the way home, and they very, very bluntly was just like, listen, softball was taken away tomorrow. You could not play softball. Is this a school that would make you happy? Would you want to go to St. Joe's? Would you want to be here? Because your education is very important. And I was like, yeah. Like, I could absolutely see myself here, even if I wasn't playing softball. It's gorgeous. The facilities, you know, on campus for the athletes, and just the buildings, and, you know, all the classrooms. I just really liked it. So it was a good fit. I mean, we hit it off on the first date, basically. So yeah, I knew that's where I wanted to be as soon as I visited the school.
So you end up at St. Joe's, and even with that mindset of, if I'm not playing, I'm still going to love it here. So I'm sure you have a lot of memories, a lot of stories you could tell from your time on Hawk Hill. What's your favorite one that you're actually able to share and that you're willing to share with an audience from your time on Hawk Hill?
You beat me to it. I was going to preface it with the ones that I can tell.
We always have to give the disclaimer. We want everyone to feel comfortable sharing it and protecting anyone's identities that
Correct.
Need to be protected.
Yeah, the G-rated stories or the G-rated versions of stories. Yeah. So I was thinking a lot about this, and I was talking to my teammates about it too, because we have a lot of good memories. But the one that sticks out in my mind, and this is probably one of those things that's way funnier to us than it is to everybody else, but still. So spring break for softball players is basically, at the time, was going to Florida for the week while everybody else went home. We play ball all week, and then we get back like a day or two before everybody else returned to campus. So there wasn't, like, cafeteria wasn't open. Nothing was happening. We were just kind of doing our own thing in our dorm rooms. So there's nobody on campus. It's super quiet. So I lived in Tower Hall at the time, but I had a couple of upperclassmen that lived in Ashwood. And my roommate and I, who was also on the team, decided we were going to go over to Ashwood to hang out, have dinner, watch a movie, because it was quiet. No, nothing was going on. So we head over there and we get to our teammate's apartment, and we have one teammate missing, and we don't know where she is. We're like, where is Doris? Her name is Kristen Doris. We called her Doris. And so I'm like, guys, where is Doris? Like, has anybody seen her? I don't know. She left a little while ago. So when we had originally gotten there, the elevator wasn't working. So we went in the stairwell, went up to the room. So we come out and we hear Doris, and she's stuck in the elevator.
No.
Okay. So, and I mean, nobody wants to be stuck in an elevator. Even if you're not claustrophobic, it's like, it makes you panic a little bit. And so she's kind of freaking out, and there's nobody on campus. So we're like, who do we call? Maybe security. Like, okay, we'll put a call into security. So we're like hysterical, though, because of all people on our team, Doris is the one that this would happen to. I mean, like, we lost her for part of a season because she fell down the hill. I guess it would be Hawk Hill, like, onto the track. And broke her ankle. Like, we lost her because she just fell down a hill. Like, absolute ridiculousness. And I'm like, of course she'd be stuck in the elevator, you know? So we're sitting in, we figured out that the elevator was like just south of her actual like floor where she lives. So we were on the floor there talking to her kind of through the closed doors, just her sane until somebody came to save her. And she's getting more upset. Like, she's getting aggravated at this point. We're hysterical because she's stuck in there. And all of a sudden she says something, and it's like, she's like on the floor. Like, we hear her, like, she's higher. We're like, oh my God, Doris, did you move? Like, it sounds like you're here. We can get you out. And she's like, no, I just stood up. She had been like on the floor. We thought she moved. She just stood up. She got super angry. I mean, we laughed for hours that night. That poor Doris, I don't think ever recovered from it, but just something so stupid, but just good memories, you know, just so great.
And that seems to be a common thread when you talk to people, and you ask that kind of question. It's not, obviously, they remember big wins, they remember tough losses, but their favorite things are the time where, you know, going out to dinner with a teammate, or be it getting a teammate stuck in an elevator trying to get them out. And I'm guessing there weren't a lot of cell phones to be had either.
Oh, yeah, so. No. Just 25 years ago, nobody had a cell phone, which is probably better. I was thinking to myself, if I had to be an athlete with social media right now and be held to whatever it was I said back then, oh my God, help me. You know, like,
on the whole, maybe it would be a little better. But if you're stuck in an elevator, you probably wish you had one.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah.
Well, hopefully it's not something as drastic as being stuck in an elevator for hours. But is there a challenge that you faced that comes to mind some point during your career? Maybe it was on the field. Maybe it was in a classroom. Just something that you know that you had to face, you had to overcome, and that you think it really shaped your career and maybe your entire life moving forward, that you knew you came out of it better off because of it.
Yeah. I mean, I'll say in general, so I was a chemistry major playing a Division I sport. So that in and of itself is like having two full-time jobs. So that was always a struggle and stressful, finding the time and the energy to study and to play. But I mean, the one thing that really stuck with me, so my freshman year, so this would be the spring of 99. I was having a phenomenal season as a freshman. I was starting in left field. I was batting fifth in the lineup behind two incredible hitters. Like I was playing really well and just having the time of my life. And we went to, our field was not on campus at the time. So we played in East Narton on the local field, right? And we were playing Wagner there. And Wagner was actually one of the schools that I went to visit to potentially, like I was recruited to play there. So I knew the coach who was super cool at the time. And I was on third base and a wild pitch was thrown and I took off for home. And I'm not sure what possessed the catcher to do what she did, but instead of running back to the backstop and like fielding the ball and underhanding it, usually you flip it to the pitcher that's covering. She got up and she fired the ball overhand and she hit me in the face and knocked me out. Like I went down and I had no idea what happened. I thought the on deck hitter hit me with her bat. Like I legit thought my roommate was like, did you just hit me? Like, wow. What did you know? So I was out. I fractured the sinus cavity in my face. I had like my teeth went through my lips. It was like, I was a hot mess. I looked like a party favor. And I had a pretty terrible, I had a concussion. It was mild, but it was symptomatic. And so I was out for at least a week. I missed two rounds of, that happened on like a Thursday or a Friday. So I missed conference games on that weekend and the next weekend, which was devastating for me because, you know, that was the crux of our schedule at the time. And when I got back, which is probably a little sooner than I should have been, but this was before proper like protocols with doctors clearing you and stuff. It was more like your coach is just being like, you look good, go back out there, you know? And I'm like, yeah, I want to play, put me in, you know?
Right.
My timing was off. I lost everything. Like I could not, it was like, I was seeing the pitch a few seconds later than I should have. So everything was off and the great season that I was having, suddenly I couldn't hit for crap. like this is awful. And so I didn't know how to fix it. Cause it's, you know, it's physical, like it's literally in my head and I didn't know how to get out of it. And, you know, I went from being on the top of the world to just now feeling awful because I have a broken face, literally, you know, my timing is off. I can't hit. And, you know, I'm going to class and I look like people are staring at me like, what happened to you? Like, did you get beat up? You know, it was several weeks of just being completely miserable and not knowing how to get out of it and having coaches at the time who were not my coaches when I graduated, having coaches at the time that were not really supportive. You know, they were just kind of like your bat's too heavy. You know, you should go to a lighter bat. And I'm like, guys, I was hitting fine in the fall, hitting fine in the spring. I get hit in the face. I have a concussion. Now like my timing's off. I'm like, it's not the bat. Like there's something going on. So I had to find a way to solve the problem. And eventually it, you know, I came around, everything kind of fell back into place and I was okay. But I mean, it's very easy to fall into a dark place when everything just kind of gets flipped over on you, you know, but my teammates were awesome. You know, they were super supportive. They always kept me laughing. The training staff at St. Joe's, I can't say enough about them. They were the best, like not only physically good trainers, but like they helped a lot with the mental game as well. Right. They kept you thinking the right things and we're always there to talk. So that was a tough one, but you know, came out of it.
I said, hopefully it wasn't as drastic as being caught in an elevator. I would argue that that's infinitely worse.
Might be
than
worse
being caught
yeah.
in an elevator. Well, you certainly bounced back in a big way and had an outstanding career on Hawk Hill. And the last question I'm going to ask you is when you think about that time, what's the biggest lesson that you took from your years in the Crimson and Gray that you took into your life after graduation? It may have been something you learned during that time when you were injured. Maybe it was something about how you were part of a team. What do you think is the biggest takeaway you have, if you had to distill it down to one, from your career with St. Joe softball?
I'll say two things. One is that teammates are the best people in your life. You'll never get better people than teammates. They're always there. But I think as far as lessons go, and you think about baseball, if you hit 300 or 350 for a career, you're pretty much considered Hall of Fame, right? Yeah. And that means that you fail 65 to 70% of the time and you're right. considered Hall of Fame, right? Like, I don't think there's any other sport where you're only successful 35% of the time mm-hmm. and you're considered Hall of Fame. Like, that's a hard thing to do. That's a hard sport to play if that's the case, right? And so I went into a line of work. I'm a chemist. I do research. I'm a process chemist at Merck. And a lot of what I do, even though I put, if I work really hard, you know, I take my time to set experiments up, a lot of what I do is going to fail every day. Like, so you have to find a way to be able to accept the failure, find things in, I'm going to use air quotes, accept the failure, you know, find ways to find things to pull from it that you can use to improve upon it. Because no matter how hard you could try as hard as possible in everything that you do, but it doesn't mean you're going to be successful all the time. And the sooner you come to that conclusion, I think the better off you're going to be. And then just learning how to move on when, you know, you haven't achieved exactly what it was that you want to achieve, and find a way to improve upon it and find the positive in it and really just make the most of the opportunities that you're given. I'd say that's probably the biggest lesson.
Well, it's a very valuable lesson, and we thank you for sharing it with us. Teresa Andriani, congratulations once again on your induction into the Hall of Fame, and thank you for taking the time to chat with us, and we'll see you next month.
Thank you. I'm looking forward to it.
And thank you for listening. We'll be back next time with more St. Joseph's Athletic Hall of Fame inductees. So we'll see you then. Be sure to subscribe to the Kettle Club Podcast Network on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or the TuneIn app. You can also find us at sjuhawks.com/podcasts.